Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
This is Stuart Venner. I tell it as I see it, and I see it as it is.
It was interesting, but it was also stupid.
This is Stuart Venner. I want to welcome you to this week's show. We've got a great lineup of guests in store. We're speaking to Jay O. He's going to tell us how to maximize your Medicare benefits. Very important if you're on Medicare or maybe caring for an elder parent. We're speaking to Bob Savage. Bob is a flat tax advocate. He's going to tell us how to get rid of income tax and the IRS. We're also speaking to Joe and Amy Alton. Joe and Amy are doctors and a nurse, and we're going to learn how to be prepared for that horrible disaster that hopefully will never come. We're also speaking to Bob Reynolds. Bob is an expert on HIV and AIDS and is going to teach us, and we're going to learn some things that are very important that we all really need to know. And finally, we're speaking to Jim Beach. Jim has an extensive background through the Orient, through the United States in business, and he's going to tell us how anyone can be an entrepreneur. Please stay tuned. I know you're going to love the show.
I've got a very interesting and knowledgeable guest on the line. We're speaking to Jay O. Jay O is going to talk to us about maximizing your Medicare. Jay is the founding member of Maximize Your Medicare LLC, a provider of full-range benefit services for employers, active employees, and retirees. We're going to talk about Obamacare and a lot of things that I think are very important to everyone, including myself, because I am on Medicare. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you very much for having me today.
Tell us about what you're doing and what your thoughts are.
Well, Medicare reaches almost every adult age person in this country. 9,000 persons a day turn 65 every single day. That's going to occur for the better part of the next two decades. Those people have family members.
Yeah, the baby boomers are coming of age.
The baby boomers are here in force.
They are.
In addition to that, they have family members. So I'm a person who has a parent who is Medicare eligible. And so inevitably, invariably, my life is affected, and sometimes I get pulled into the situations, or persons like me get pulled into the situation under circumstances which are not comfortable, and they've not had the conversation with their family, with their senior parent, on what their concerns and worries. It's a difficult topic. Your parents getting older. You don't like to see them age, much less getting weaker or facing financial challenges.
Well, I have a system myself. As I get older, I just keep marrying younger women. And I think I'm going to keep this present one, because otherwise I'm going to end up with a teenager. Seriously, though, how do you feel Obamacare is going to affect this? Are there going to be death squads? What do you think?
It's going to be interesting. But reality is that I don't assign a lot of the challenges to Medicare to the Affordable Care Act, or otherwise known as Obamacare. The reality is kind of what I spoke about at the beginning. You're talking about 9,000 people a day turning 65-sville, meaning everybody in this country that turned 65 this year. If they were put into one place, that's the third largest city in the United States. Right, so once you... So we can politicize the matter, and it's certainly popular to try to find one source, one factor to blame, and certainly Obamacare can be the lightning rod for that. But it's more of the demographic and fiscal reality, which is that
we just can't afford it all.
We have a declining tax base.
That's right.
You can see that as it's being stressed out in municipalities. You can see... I grew up in Michigan, and you see the city of Detroit having to face no other choice, candidly, but to put retirees into a very, very difficult situation as a result of, you know, a declining tax base, people moving from place to place, etc.
Now, I have an Advantage plan myself, and I really don't pay anything to speak of out of pocket.
If you make the... It's very interesting that the first piece of advice I'd give to any person who is eligible for Medicare is to make sure that you don't face Medicare only with Original Medicare, which is that red, white, and blue card.
I did that for a while, and I was paying quite a bit out of pocket.
Exactly. When you go to the doctor, when you require prescriptions, for example, and you have only the red, white, and blue card, it's certainly a decent start, but it's not a complete solution. And so that's really the point of the book, Stuart, which is to explain, okay, here's actually how the red, white, and blue card works by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then what does the private market offer on top of that? And then tries to go through examples. I call them this happens, meaning examples that scenarios that can happen to people under different situations, different marital situations, different retirement situations, and then how they, what type of risks they may face and how they want to think about it.
Well, I wish I'd have read your book before I went with straight Medicare, because I would have a lot more money in my pocket. Although
and
I don't go to a doctor that much, but the few times I went, it was expensive.
Absolutely, and that is something that many people face. You can know that even the person who is responsible for helping me promote my book, her, when she talked to me first, she said, you know, my mother actually requires substantial amounts of medical attention, and she did not. She was completely uninformed about it, and you know, the mother turned to daughter. The daughter was concerned about her mother, wanted to help any way she could, and she was completely uninformed about it.
Sure.
And this is not atypical, I don't think. I think it is more common than it is.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And there's a big difference between the Advantage plans as well. There's a lot of difference.
There's a large menu, of course. You know, the outstanding thing about Advantage plans is that's an annual contract, meaning that the small print, meaning prices and cost-sharing arrangements, mm-hmm. changes on an annual basis. And you need to, it just from a consumer point of view, it is wise to look at that every year. Now, that can be difficult, and if that is reason for, again, you know, back to the book, meaning that if you need some assistance from a family member, well, maybe somehow that family member has to be able to speak your language. And if it may be the case that the situation is too complicated, in which case you may need specific additional advice.
That's very true. And, you know, I personally, from my own personal aspect, they come out good with me. They come out very well because I'm not sick. You know, I get a physical once a year, and I take one pill twice a day for indigestion. And
of course, by all means, Stuart, the best insurance, of course, is to stay healthy.
Right. But what I was going to say is I looked at different Advantage plans, and they actually said, no, you're supposed to have one pill a day, not two. I said, well, the doctor says I need two.
Right.
So it's a cheap pill, so I found another plan that covers my medicine, which is all I take, a cheap heartburn pill. It's a generic form of Prilosec.
Sure.
And, you know, that's it. But you've got to shop around to be sure that you get the right plan.
There are studies on this, Stuart, actually, that is specifically with prescription, standalone prescription plans. You have something different, but in the standalone prescription plan arena, when persons don't shop around, when they don't check, and they can change without restriction annually, but anyway, if they do not, that over time this can be 10% a year. Now, 10% a year over 1 year may be okay. 10% over 20 years, that's a fairly a large, you know, chunk of change there.
And something I discovered, which may not necessarily have to do with Medicare, but talking about prescription drugs, before I was on Medicare, the same pill that I take, I at Walgreens, at CVS, at any of the pharmacies, the prescription for the month's pills was like $300 or $400. And that same prescription I was able to fill at Costco online for $20.
It is one of the...
$20 versus $400?
It's one of the large courses that the way that prescriptions are distributed to the large pharmaceuticals or discount stores varies wildly, even from month to month. And under Medicare, it does get substantially better just because... Especially, for example, in your case, if it's the acid reflux medication,
yes,
and it's a generic form, then it's going to be very inexpensive, depending on, you know, how your Medicare Advantage plan is configured.
Well, I don't pay anything out of pocket, so you know, for me, it works out very well. Jay, I think you offer invaluable advice for everyone if you're a senior or if you are caring for a senior, like my wife. Can you tell everyone how to get your book and how to learn more about this? Because this is really important information.
The book is called Maximize Your Medicare. It is available on Amazon. What isn't these days?
That's right.
It is available both in ebook as well as print format. I have a website which is called MaximizeYourMedicare.com. So there's a website there. It will tell you about the book. There are all sorts of links there. Today's not my first experience with talk radio. I've also given this type of presentation. Medicare ABCs is what I call it. That is a presentation I've given at Library Systems. One other thing, Stuart, I'll mention here today is that next Monday, the 19th at 7 p.m., I'll be giving a live video webinar on Medicare. It's based on Medicare ABCs, so I'll be explaining all the different components and talking about, it's an information session. People will be able to type in questions live. They can call in live. And there's a money-back guarantee, maybe best of all.
That's
in other
wonderful.
Words, you know, I'd suggest to people that for the cost of a gallon of gas, that the information that they get, they'll get their money's worth. And that is the same guarantee I give for the book.
Well, I think that's very, very important. Because I tell you, I would have saved money had I read your book, even though it wasn't a lot of money, but I still would have saved money, certainly more than the cost of that book. Jay, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Welcome back. I have Bob Savage on the line. Robert L. Savage is a man who's got quite an extensive education. He has an extensive military career, and he's written a book about the fairest tax, which I think certainly we need to do something about that. Bob, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much. It's great to be with you today.
Well, I think anybody can agree that our current tax system is really obsolete and cumbersome and really not too fair to anybody.
It's a quagmire. It just
yes, it
goes
is.
On and on, and it is not at all particularly based on any kind of value that our government services represent to us as their customers.
I totally agree with you there. And what do you think we need to do? Is it a flat tax, or what are you advocating?
I advocate something very similar to the fair tax. I grew up in retailing. I've been in retailing since I retired from a large corporation. I have some understanding about sales taxes, and I think taxing the consumer at the point of sale is the way to go. It means the consumer has a choice. It means that the money collected is generally collected in and returns to the area where the consumer is, whether they're at home or out on the road somewhere, and that's where the services are provided.
You mean their actual government's a federal sales tax, but not to be used by the general fund, but to be used in the local area?
No. in my plan, they would go to the general funds.
Okay.
But in my plan, in order to simplify it, I would have it such that you would not only be paying your federal tax with this sales tax, but you'd be paying your state tax and your local tax at the same time if that's what your state and chooses to do.
Well, I tend to agree with you with this.
All three of your taxes at the same time.
I think that certainly does have merit, but you know, I've heard read and people have said that that's really a poor person's tax.
Not really. A national sales tax is what most economists would say is a very progressive tax. That is, you pay more tax as your income goes up because you buy more.
Now, would you exempt essentials like food and what would you
In
would you
plan,
exempt
I
anything?
I do. I exempt basic foods. For example, if you buy meat and potatoes and veggies at the local supermarket, they would be exempt. If you buy ice cream, if you buy things that are not basic, they would not be exempt.
Oh, Bob, ice cream is a basic for me. That. My God, I can't live without my ice cream.
If you go to a restaurant where the food is prepared for you, or if you buy frozen TV dinners, it would not be exempt. Another thing that wouldn't be exempt would be the building materials when you build a house. Another thing that would be exempt would be insurance, especially medical insurance. So,
well,
so
I can agree with you there.
Basic things would be exempt.
So it really isn't so much of a poor person's tax. It really is a fair tax where everyone is paying their fair share. And the more money you have, obviously you're going to buy more things and more luxuries and pay more tax.
Well, there are two issues in my mind with the fair tax. One is, for the very poor, even with the exemptions, they still have to spend a tremendously high proportion of their income on taxable items. So I do add a component, which doesn't really complicate things very much at all, but I do add a component which gives a break for people who do the right things, put a roof over their family's head, put food on their family's table, put clothes on their family's back, buy medical insurance, and if they go a little further and turn in some volunteer time or keep their kids in school, they can even turn that into a little bit of a refund, not really a refund, but a credit, if you will.
This could create an underground economy of sorts where so much is being done under the table.
Pardon?
I mean, this could create a little bit of an underground economy.
Actually, it would bring a tremendous amount of the underground economy out from under the table.
Okay.
Think of all the people who do services for you at your house that prefer to be paid in cash.
Now, let me ask you a question. On what level would you tax? On every level, for example, would the retailer buying the merchandise wholesale, would that be taxable?
No. It
okay.
would only be taxable when the final consumer buys it. One thing you don't want to do is get into what's called a value-added tax.
Right.
We've already got in our retail prices today huge amounts of taxes that have been collected from the miner, the farmer, the manufacturer.
Would you eliminate that?
The distributor. You'd get rid of all that.
Okay.
And instead, it would end up in the final sale.
Have you thought about what rate would work, would generate the income needed?
Yeah.
What?
Stand by.
I'm
ready. Hang on to your seat.
I'm ready.
How about 50 to 60, 75%?
What?
Let me tell you an example, though, that I had when we.
You mean you mean I'm going to pay a 50% sales tax?
Yes.
That's a lot of money.
We were in the retail business in Atlanta.
Okay.
My wife and I. If you came into our store and bought a teddy bear for $10, you paid $10 plus the going state sales tax in Atlanta, I guess it currently is still the same, 7%. You paid $10.70 for that teddy bear.
Okay.
I took our books several years after the accountants finished it and we had filed our taxes and all that sort of thing, and I took out all of the costs that we passed on to the consumer that were, in effect, taxes. I could have sold you that teddy bear for $8, not $10. Then I got to thinking, if my distributor could take the taxes out of his, if the manufacturer could take the tax out of his product, he could ultimately sell it to me at a much lower price. I could have ended up probably selling you that teddy bear for somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 to $6.
So then you add the 50% tax, and I'm paying $7.50 to $9, which is less than the original price.
Well, if I then added a 75% tax to that $6, you know what the price would be to you?
$10. It would be $10, yeah.
For all intents and purposes, it's the same price that you're paying today. The difference is today, so much of the government's taxes, whether they be state or whether they be federal or even local, are buried in that $10 price you're paying today. We could get that down to where it was much less. Now, I know people would immediately kind of clutch their heart over the idea of a 75%.
You scared me when you first said it.
Rate. But the truth is, the consumer price would be almost no different.
Very interesting. Now, I'm reading in your bio that you have a startup 501c3 that you're the director of, the American Foundation for Furthering Ideas That Rekindle the Miracle of 1776. That's a mouthful.
That is a mouthful. So and what we do, we go by.
How long have you, when you got your 501c3, did you go through a lot of hassle with Lois Lerner?
I did go look not too long ago to see if our approval letter was signed by her. It was not. It was signed by someone else.
I had a 501c3 a number of years ago, and it was signed by her.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Well, I've run into several people lately who have exactly that experience.
Well, Bob, could you tell us how the folks out there can read your book and learn more about it? Because it's pretty interesting.
They can get the book on Amazon. They can get the book on Books A Million or Barnes & Noble. And they can also get it from my publisher, Tate Publishing, at their online store. Or they can email me and get a signed copy.
Well, I like that. Can you give everyone your email or your website?
I'd be happy to. It's B as in Bob, Savage, Savage, at Hartcom, HARTCOM.net.
All right. Well, Bob, you've been a delightful guest and very interesting, and I'm going to ponder these numbers around in my head. But I know that something certainly has to be done to get rid of this arcane system that we have.
I do actually have a proposed constitutional amendment written into the book as a way to get things started if enough people were to get behind the idea.
Well, Bob, thank you very much for being on the show, and you have a wonderful day, sir.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, buyyourtimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Welcome back to the show. I've got a couple of guests online. A very interesting interview this is going to be. We're speaking to Joe and Amy Alton, known as Doom and Bloom, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy. They are survivalists. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stuart, and we're happy to be here.
We are really happy to have you on the show. A survivalist, I'm reading your bio. Dr. Bones, Joe, he's a medical doctor, an MD. Amy is an advanced registered nurse practitioner, midwife. You've got an extensive background, and you are really survivalists, aren't you?
Well, we are people that are prepared for any disaster. They've used a lot of names. There's preppers, there's survivalists. And when you say the word survivalist, of course, you think about somebody dressed in camouflage, hunkered down in some underground
remote
underground bunker
mountain by
somewhere. We're actually regular people, but we're regular people that have a mission, and that's to get some of those individuals in our community that don't think about what could happen in a disaster and get them prepared from not only a food standpoint, but also from a medical standpoint. It's beans and bandages to us.
So you're not driving around in a pickup truck with a shotgun across the rear window.
Well, I can't say that I might have had some relatives in the past that did that. But no, we actually live in a beautiful urban environment. We're regular folks. I go to the grocery store when I have to. I do grow as much food as possible. But, you know, I have neighbors on either side of me. And so we do what we can with our limited space. And that's how most people in this country are living. We don't have 40 acres of farmland and 40 cattle and 45 chickens and 100 rabbits. That's not a normal American lifestyle. So what we're trying to do is tell people you don't have to be out there on the farm. It's okay to be within the city limits, but still understand that disasters can happen and you need to have some preps, at least some skills.
It can happen anywhere in the world at any time, at any place. I remember during World War II, people had victory gardens.
That's right.
You're absolutely right. And there's a great new tendency for gardening.
Well, I would think so. With some of the pesticides and the artificial things that they put into our food today, you're probably healthier growing your own if you can.
Boy, do you know that. And unfortunately, I had to fight tooth and nail because our homeowners association was none too happy about me growing carrots. How
really?
Awful of me. Yes, I had to get the newspaper and call the television stations, and thankfully I had a friend who was a lawyer, so it was intimidating to them, because no matter how many letters I wrote about this being so green, cutting down emissions by not driving to the grocery store, I was only organically growing, so I was not adding any pesticides or poisons to our environment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Probably a 150-page document of how wonderful it is to grow your food.
Well, these HOAs are something else. I mean, I deal with real estate primarily all over the country, and what you find in a homeowners association is you find usually a lot of older people that have never had much power in their life, and all of a sudden they're given Nazi-like power.
I know, and I think, unfortunately, in South Florida, we get a lot of transplants from inner-city folk who have never grown a plant in their entire life. All they know is they have
maybe some pot. That's probably all they've ever grown.
maybe outside, but you know, they just don't understand the concept of growing food, and it was foreign to them, and dangerous and scary, and they threatened to come on my property and pull out all of my food.
I think that's fantastic.
I don't think that's a very good idea.
Now you raised tilapia, I read.
Yes, we have purebred blue tilapia. They're actually a really beautiful fish.
They taste good, too.
They do. We went to a restaurant in Denver, and it was the most expensive item on the menu was blue tilapia.
Really?
And I thought, heck, I got those at home.
How do your neighbors in the HOA feel about your little fish pond?
They don't mind any aquatic features, so that's not a problem. You can build ponds.
That's okay. Carrots are bad.
Carrots. That's what I said. And I made beautiful raised beds. I built them myself. Some of them were cedar. Just really pretty with marigolds in them and very nicely landscaped around.
I bet it is.
Oh, you know, the funny thing about it is that these folks were all from the city, and it took them more than a year to figure out that those were carrot greens.
Or any kind of food stuff at all.
But nobody had ever seen a carrot actually in the ground.
Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah, they don't even know what food looks like. I could plant this stuff in my front yard.
Really funny. Do you actually go to some of these disaster sites after they occur?
Yes, actually. We have been at Hurricane Andrew.
We lived through that
Homestead area, and we've helped out there. In the early part of my career, I was an obstetrician, and I bundled up a bunch of pregnant ladies that were over 7 months, and basically took care of them during the storm itself. It was amazing. Looking out the window during the storm, I actually saw a concrete bus bench tip over.
My God,
that is the strength of what some of these storms are like.
Yeah.
Also,
it is amazing, and the people do need education. I mean, they really need this. Humans need to be educated.
It's so true. Unfortunately, our school system does not teach basic human health anymore. You might get an anatomy class or a physiology class if you want to take them, because they require sciences, but they don't tell you which science to take.
Remember when that big tsunami hit in Thailand a number of years ago? I think hundreds of thousands of people were killed, and all the intelligent humans walked out into the water to get a better look at the big wave that was coming, and all the dumb animals ran to high ground. So maybe you need to follow the mentality of a field mouse.
Instinct, right. Well, there's something to be said about gut feeling and instinct. But what we're trying to do is teach people about their bodies and how to take care of themselves, because we're so reliant upon the modern medical facilities. If you don't feel well, you don't try to figure out what's going on or cure yourself in any way. You immediately go to a doctor because they have that secret knowledge. And what we're trying to do is take that secret knowledge, put it in plain English, and let people understand what might be going on, only if there's a situation where you can't get to that doctor, and now you have no idea what to do.
That's exactly right. And you've written a book, haven't you, The Survival Medicine Handbook. Is that your book?
The Survival Medicine Handbook is our book. We've been really gratified by its reception. It's been number one on Amazon in the category of survival skills, category of disaster relief, category of safety and first aid, and it is a unique it's a unique book in that every single word in this book, which is over 550 pages, assumes that there are no doctors, that there are no hospitals, and that you, the average person, are now the highest medical resource left to your family after a disaster. And it teaches
I think
you
that's something everyone should read. I mean, this is really important. Especially
we have geared
this. I mean, this crazy world we're living in, anything can happen.
You're so right. You can go to sleep, and 5 minutes later, an earthquake happened. Or the skies open up with flooding. I mean, there are people who are driving in their cars, and suddenly this giant tornado comes out of nowhere. And they're swept away. So you just never know. And the reason we only have this book in paperback is because if you don't have electricity or you're away from your electronics that everybody is so reliant upon, a physical book is something you could read by candlelight. You don't have to have electricity to get a good resource. So Google's great if you're home, But this is something that you can keep with you, and no matter what happens, you can grab it with your the stuff you're leaving your house with and have a good medical resource. And so, that's why it's a paperback.
I recommend everyone get this book, because if you have this book, it might just save your life and your family's lives.
Exactly. It's the point of you can have so many different careers. You know, not everybody has a nurse who's a wife or a doctor who's an uncle. And, you know, you might be surrounded by a group of family members and nobody has any medical experience or knowledge whatsoever. So we're trying to put that into the hands of average folks.
So this book People can really be the difference between living and dying. That's seriously.
Right, exactly.
So well, everybody go to Amazon and buy the Survival Medicine Handbook. It could save your life. Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. BuyYourTimeshare.com. That's BuyYourTimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Folks, welcome back to the show. I've got a real important guest online. We're speaking to Bob Reynolds. Bob is from the PASCO, Inc., which is an organization helping and supporting AIDS victims. And we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about a lot of things related to it. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you. Can you tell us what your main impetus and what your message you're trying to get out?
I've been involved with the HIV community since 1978, originally in Ohio. Back at that time, we didn't know what we were dealing with other than people were getting sick and dying within a matter of months.
It was a death sentence back then, I remember.
Yes, we didn't even have a name for it. There was a period where we called it gay men's disease and gay men's cancer, moved on, and finally in the around 82, 83, they identified the virus as the human immunological virus that then subsequently in a couple of years they acquired immune deficiency or AIDS syndrome. And it was in 1996 before the pharmaceutical companies really had caught up with the virus and were able to start effectively treating it. Prior to that, the treatment was almost worse than the disease.
You know, it seems, if I remember right, tell me if I'm wrong, it was, well, I think, when Magic Johnson got it. Then it really got into the forefront, and people heard about it, and they realized it wasn't only a gay person's disease, but it was something that could really happen to anyone, and then they really started working on a cure.
Well, the treatment, and I'll emphasize the word treatment over cure,
okay,
at this stage, because that's really where we're at.
It is treatable, though.
It's been effectively treated when properly diagnosed and then a regimen is established. But the numbers are not impressive, to be honest with you, even today. Certainly Rock Hudson and Elizabeth
right.
Taylor were famous people who brought this issue to the forefront, and there are many other people in show business that helped educate the general public and were able to raise the significant funds, which encouraged the pharmaceutical companies to then get involved, and eventually in the late 80s, the government recognized the fact that there was, in fact, a pandemic, a real epidemic that was going to affect a lot more than just gay men.
Yes, it affects a lot of people. In fact, my wife's father actually died from AIDS, which he received through a bad blood transfusion.
Correct, and that's where the name Ryan White is so important. A young man out of Indianapolis was diagnosed in the late 80s, and his was an infection that occurred when he got a transfusion, and the school system banned him or forced him not to attend school.
I remember that he was really stigmatized. It was terrible.
Right. A 10-year-old child, through no fault under anybody's moral code, would have accused him. And his parents were obviously very supportive, but he was eloquent in being able to bring this issue to the forefront, and eventually Congress reacted with the first Ryan White authorization.
Of course, and I think that it's important that people know, maybe you can let everyone know that, and I don't think it has the stigma that it did back then, but this is really not that contagious. I mean, you don't catch AIDS shaking someone's hand or talking to them or visiting with them.
No, actually, as far as a contagious disease is concerned, in today's society, hepatitis is much more contractable.
Yes, it
through
is.
Just casual contact with one another. That virus will stay alive up to 30 days in some instances outside of the human body, where the HIV or virus dies immediately upon contact with the air.
So it's actually very hard to catch.
Yes.
And I know we have a link on our website under service organizations where people can donate to the PASCO Inc. organization,
yes.
Which is PASCOinc.org. Can you tell us about the work that they're doing? Because they're doing some important things here in Florida and the Tampa Bay area.
Yes, PASCO Inc. or PASCO AIDS Service Community Organization is the real name.
Okay.
Has been in existence since 1987. It became a nonprofit 501c3 in, I think it was 89, something like that. So they've been around for a long time. And their initial thrust was just to provide comfort to people living with the disease. They really were one-on-one helping another person who, well, in most cases, unfortunately, died. The community and the church in the area were very supportive in many instances, and we provided food and care. And in many instances, in those days, the medical community itself, especially particularly in more rural communities, were not aware of what the proper treatment and the issue of contagion, how they might be acquired. And so many of the professionals were unwilling to treat. So as a result, we had just those of us who were involved in the community and aware that could reach out and help those who needed assistance.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. I mean, they weren't out there to raise money for the cure. There's plenty of people doing that for treatment and for cure, but you were actually on a one-on-one basis helping people that needed help themselves.
Right. PASCO is one of the few, what is considered or called a community-based organization, left in the United States. I'm not talking about just Florida, where we do not have paid staff. We do not have people who go out and fundraise, per se, and do all these things. We do it within the group itself, and it's only a group of maybe 110 people, most of whom are residents in Pasco County. I don't happen to live in Pasco County, and I am secretary of the group, but I believe in their cause and the need, and we have been able to move past some of the care issues because of the professional organizations that currently exist, so that much of what we do is in the area of prevention and assistance to people who have temporary financial needs.
Well, everyone listening to the show, if you go to PASCOINC.org, PASCOINC.org, or there is a link from our website, StuartVenner.com, I think it's a great place for you to send a little money and do a little help. These are people that are doing a great job for people that are suffering with AIDS and that need help and personal help. And this is one of the few charities you're going to ever find that really 100% of your money is going for care and for the purpose that their message that they want to get out, their mission. Bob, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Welcome back to the show. I've got a really great guest online. We're speaking to Jim Beach. Jim is written a book called The School for Startups. It's a big-selling book, and Jim has quite a background in business and in Oriental business tactics, where he's worked with Japanese business administration degrees. Quite an extensive bio. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Oh, it's an honor to have you on the show. Tell me, you have quite a background in the Orient. Tell us a little bit about what you've done.
Well, my goal in life before I discovered entrepreneurship was to be the CEO of Coca-Cola. And in the 80s, Coca-Cola's biggest market was in Japan. It still is, as a matter of fact.
Really?
And so I thought the best way to be the CEO of Coca-Cola was to start in Japan and learn that market. And I did my undergraduate, a good deal of my undergraduate work there. Most of my master's was done in Japanese. I worked for the Japanese government doing export promotions for 2 years, and then I worked for Coca-Cola in Japan. And Coca-Cola, after 6 months, said, "We think you should work somewhere else." And I was invited to leave, and that's when I became an entrepreneur.
Well, I don't blame you. You know, when you work for somebody, you really are at their mercy, and I've always had trouble working for anybody, frankly.
Exactly.
But I bet you learned a lot about the Japanese business ethics, because they're good business people. They work hard.
They do. They work very hard, and it was a great time for me, a great experience. I would recommend it to anybody.
I bet you would. It sounds like it. And the Americans, a lot of them don't have the work ethic that the Japanese have. They're bakatari, right?
That is true. That is right. I certainly think a lot of Americans have grown lazy in the last 20, 30 years, unfortunately, yes.
Well, look at the size of them.
Yeah, that's true.
Tell us a little bit about your book, because it's fascinating, your background and what you've done.
Well, the book is about entrepreneurship. The thesis is that anyone can be a successful entrepreneur if they just rethink the myths. You know, there's all these myths out there about entrepreneurship, especially like there's three things: the idea that it takes risk, creativity, and passion. And I believe that those are the reasons people are not becoming entrepreneurs. People say, "Well, I can't take the risk right now. My boys are about to go off to college. I can't risk it."
Maybe you can't afford not to risk it.
It may be so. Maybe you're the exact opposite. So our book says, well, start for under $5,000. That's not risking too much. You know, you can afford that. We also don't believe in creativity. You know, people say, "I'm waiting for God to strike me with a creativity lightning bolt." Well, 93% of businesses around the world are copies of other businesses. What's wrong with getting on Google and saying, free business ideas? Thousands of them are out there. So
you know, that's exactly, I agree with you completely. I've been pretty successful in many of my ventures. I've had some that weren't. But I always found that I'd rather not be the first one ever doing something. I'd rather be the second one and try to do it a little better.
That's right. You're learning, that's exactly right. If you have to educate the market on your product and the industry, it's very difficult. And I love what you said. Just do it better. That's all that matters. Take an idea like a dog daycare, a kennel. Just do a better kennel where they can watch their pet online all day and where you have classes for the pets and entertainment. Just do the best kennel that's ever been done. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's exactly right. I mean, years ago, I had a charity I headed up as well as a for-profit company that worked in conjunction with it, and we provided down payment assistance with FHA loans for first-time home buyers. And at the time we started that, there was one company doing it. And I looked at it, and I said, what a great idea. I said, but there's a few things they're not doing, which is quite right. And we started up ours. We gave over $100 million worth of down payment assistance by the time the industry actually ended with legislation. But at that time, there were about 160 companies doing it. And, you know, they all copied the first one almost verbatim, and they didn't quite see the subtle nuances that we had done in our business. And when it came to the end, they all owed the IRS a whole bunch of money, and I think I settled with them for $2,000 just to get rid of it.
lesson learned.
It really is. And it doesn't take a lot of money. It takes really more thought, ingenuity, and it doesn't always take a lot of money to start a business, does it?
Well, you know, that's something that the media has done. They taught us that you have to go raise a bunch of venture capital. 430 of the Fortune 500 were started for under 5,000. Most businesses want to be started for under 5,000. The media just lies to us and says, go raise $10 million in venture capital. That's what Facebook
If you're going to manufacture an automobile, maybe so, but...
Right. For most businesses, you don't need to do that. You should start with the money you have saved up. If you don't have anything saved up, start with nothing. My first business, I started with $200 borrowed on a credit card. That business grew to 700 employees at 89 locations. Don't tell me it takes a bunch of money to start a business.
Well, everybody hearing this, this man knows what he's talking about. If he can take 200 bucks on a credit card and build it to that kind of business, you're the kind of guy you want to talk to and listen to.
Well, thank you.
Tell us how people can get your book and really learn more about this.
Well, it's available on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, things like that. And the cool thing is, if you buy the book, you know, if you buy the Kindle version for $9, it comes with a code in the back that gives you access to 80 hours of online videos. Everything we know about entrepreneurship, some great information, you get that totally for free. So for $9, you get a pretty good book, and you get 80 hours worth of educational material.
That's amazing.
It's good value.
That's amazing. Well, I think you're great, really, Jim, and I think everybody can learn an awful lot from you. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
My pleasure. My honor.
All right, sir. Thank you. And again, the book is called School for Startups, right?
That's right.
All right, everybody, go on Amazon or online and get Jim Beach's School for Startups. Thanks again.
I wet myself.
Aren't you ashamed?
Good night.